It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 35th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks for listening. This week, Arvid Nelson returns to talk about Oblivion and to talk about Zero Killer, a book I got to read after I interviewed him a few weeks ago. Really liked that book a lot, and I wanted to talk with him about it. So I think you'll enjoy that interview. After that, there'll be some comics reviews, followed by a review of the new Green Lantern animated series. They just had a hour-long preview on Cartoon Network. My brother Randy Hall, who's a big GL fan, will be by and we'll talk about that. Then Gianluca Glazer will talk about this week's news and previews, as well as talk about the book he liked this week the most. Then we'll have a peek in the local comic store and see what's new there. Since we have so much on our plate, let's get to it. Welcome back to the podcast, Arvid Nelson, who we spoke with recently, and there's some other ground we want to cover, so I want to be sure that we get that in. So how are you doing today, Arvid?
I'm terrific. How about you?
Doing well. Now, there was another project you're doing that we wanted to talk about, and that's Oblivion. Do you want to give us some information on that?
Yeah, I'm working on that with Joe Kosinski. He was the director of Tron Legacy. That was a really exciting project. One of the coolest things about it was going to the production office and seeing some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that goes on. The story Oblivion is set in the future. It's post-apocalyptic, but it's very different from Zero Killer, for instance, a comic that I do. I think when you think about post-apocalyptic, you think about, you know, Mad Max and kind of arid landscapes, and it's very primitive. There's a really interesting mix of high tech and some of the more familiar elements of post-apocalyptic fiction. So yeah, it's a great project to work on.
So what's the basic storyline?
There are two characters. Their names are Jack and Vika, and they live in something called a Sky Tower, which is very, very high above the surface of the Earth. At some point in the past, there was an alien invasion of Earth. Most of the Earth was irradiated. In fact, all of it was. There are very, very, very few people left, including Jack and Vika. The aliens were defeated, but the process of healing the Earth and cleansing the Earth of the last few remnants of the aliens who are kind of dug into the surface of the Earth is going to take a long time. So Jack and Vika are occupied by that.
Okay, so this is in present day?
The alien invasion was so traumatic that people have sort of lost a sense of connection with the past and a sense of time, but it set some indeterminate time in the future. Not, I would say, thousands of years in the future, or even hundreds, but certainly decades.
Okay, and what's the story that's happening? I mean, I don't want to ask, just get too much information, but on the other hand, I want to know what's going on.
The story borrows so much from so many great science fiction stories like Logan's Run or Planet of the Apes or... But basically, a spacecraft crash lands into the Earth, and there's a woman inside of the spacecraft. And Jack, the male character, he's been having dreams about this woman, and he doesn't understand why. And when the woman wakes up, she has a different version of the events that have happened in the past. So it throws Jack into a real tailspin. More than that, would kind of be giving stuff away. But that's sort of Jack's story, his journey, whether or not he believes this woman, where it leads him and the adventures that they have.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, it's a classic love triangle. There's Jack and Vika who are in the Sky Tower. And they kind of have a not exactly a happy existence, but kind of a comfortable existence. And this new person, this interloper, disrupts all of that.
Okay. Now, this comes out from Radical?
Yeah.
Is this a miniseries? Do you know when it's going to come out?
First of all, it's straight prose. It's going to be a novel, but there are fantastic illustrations that go with it. The artist's name is Andre Wallen, and he did about a dozen illustrations for it, which are just awesome. But my understanding is that they are pretty focused on the film right now, and that we're going to be timing the release of the novel closer to coincide with the release of the film. So I think it's all dependent on that. But yeah, they've made amazing progress on the film. So I am really excited to see it move forward.
Now, is this like Rex Mundi, where this is a concept you came up with and it's being translated into film? Or was this an idea you had for film? How's this working?
No, actually, this was an idea that Joe Kosinski had, and he very generously brought me on board to work with it. And that was a great, interesting experience, crafting the vision with him and working with him. But, you know, it's definitely very much his story. And at the end of the day, when someone brings you their story, you have to be respectful of that.
So any ideas as to when the film will be finished, or they don't have a date yet?
You know, that is I have no idea. I'm definitely not on the inside track. Okay. As far as that stuff goes. But the announcement I've seen on the internet are really exciting. I think they are really, really moving forward on it. So there's lots of stuff on the Radical website, too, that you can check out. So I would say within a few years.
Great. So that's in the process. I wanted to get back and talk with you because the last time we talked, I hadn't read Zero Killer yet. And after I got done talking with you, I went straight to the bookstore. And luckily, there's one local bookstore that carries all kinds of good things. And I was able to get a copy. And I sat and I read it, and I was really impressed with it. In a sense, I understand where you're coming from, because it's a really fascinating story. I'm drawn to comics that are not necessarily the Long John stuff. You know, yeah, there's plenty of that, sure. And I enjoy that. But this one is a very unique story. I love the way that you set it up. And maybe what you ought to do, since if maybe people who didn't listen to the other podcast might need a little background as to what Zero Killer is about.
Yeah, sure. Basically, it's set in present-day New York City. I was just living in New York City at the time when I had the idea for the story. I mean, if I had been living in Baltimore or New Haven, Connecticut, I probably would have set the story there. Mm-hmm. So in a weird way, New York isn't the most important part of the story, although it is in some ways. But basically, present-day New York City, but there are historical differences in this world. The United States never dropped atom bombs on Japan to end World War II. So basically, that precipitated a whole different chain of historical events, and there was a nuclear war in 1973. Mm-hmm. So when the bombs hit New York City, it caused the island to sink about 100 feet or so into New York Harbor. So there are just these kind of skeletons of buildings poking up out of the water. And each building is inhabited by a gang. And each gang is its own kind of little micro nation state. I mean, they have their own kind of ways of dressing, their own codes of conduct, their own sort of mini cultures, a lot like the Warriors, actually. Mm-hmm. That was one of the main inspirations for the story. So the main character's name is Zero, and he's not affiliated with any of the gangs, which makes his life very difficult. There are these legends about this place called Africa, which is way, way, way to the east, and apparently it was never hit by the nuclear bombs. So everyone wants to go there. And the story begins with Zero, who's this kind of outcast, and someone comes to him and offers him a way to get to Africa. Mm-hmm. So that's how the story begins.
It's pretty cool because he gets involved with a girl by the name of Stark.
Yeah.
And things go interesting from there. We get a little bit of Zero's background, and I don't want to give stuff away, but there's a really big surprise about the Zero character we find out several issues in, which I really like. Yeah. Now, if you get the trade, you go into several issues, and he goes back to the place where he once was living, and he doesn't get a very nice reception.
Yeah.
And it's really an interesting thing. He ends up in a fight with his former protector and former friend. And the interesting thing has to do with his relationship with Zero's brother.
Yeah.
And, you know, his stuff in there. And again, I'm loath to spoil things, but there's a really good storyline going on there. There's a big surprise having to do with the brother we also get along the way. And it's such a fascinating story to me. You know, this just, when I read it, just like everything else that you write, it screams movie to me. And
yeah.
I could just see this on the big screen real easy like. So I'm hoping that we'll get to do more of it. You said last time that you were a little surprised that it didn't go over as well as you'd hoped.
Yeah. I was disappointed, but not surprised.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, it's okay. It's part of being a writer. Yeah, it was too bad. I'd love to do the second series of Zero Killer, which is going to be very different. You'll learn a lot more about the world, and it'll become more of less post-apocalyptic and more of straight science fiction, or I call it biopunk, because a lot of the technology that exists in the world of Zero Killer has to do with genetics and biology.
And so are there plans, or is it kind of on hold at the moment?
Yeah, you know, I've got plans. I got the whole thing laid out. I know exactly what I want to happen. Mm-hmm. The problem is, like I said, no one really read the first trade paperback. So, it was a little discouraging. I need a little more affirmation from the world, I guess, before I go ahead with the second trade paperback. I mean, maybe if I ever make enough money off of my other projects, I'll come back to it and money be damned. But for right now, I just have to move on. But yeah, I mean, I'm very hopeful. I firmly believe at some point in the future, I will come back and I'll do the second series of Zero Killer and it'll be bigger than Harry Potter. And yeah, you know, the limousines, caviar.
Yeah, yeah.
All that.
Well, you know, until that day happens, I'm going to enjoy the first trade, which is great. Now, one of the things I loved about the trade was in the back, you get the story that was released on a free comic book day that wasn't in the regular books. And I really thought that was a great little story in its own right. You get to see him. He's sort of an avenging force going on. And he reminds me a little of Batman in the second story, in this backstory. And I like the fact that New York City, which is already a strange place, is even stranger. And he's, and believe it or not, he's the voice of sanity, which is a kind of a funny thing. So
right, yeah.
I love the character. I like the story. I like the setup. It's just, I hope we get to see, to read more of it. I really like the story. Have you thought about ever going like to maybe digital with it or something like that?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's not so much the medium or the way it's done. It's just the process of actually scripting out six comic books is just a lot of time, and I'm spending so much of my time now working on this novel. You know, another issue with comics is it's collaborative, so you're only as strong as your weakest link. I've just had so many delays with the, I mean, Zero Killer, for instance, there was a year-long hiatus in between, I think, issue 3 and issue 4.
Oh.
That was just heartbreaking. There's nothing I could do about it, but it was just heartbreaking to me. It really killed it. Rex Mundi took 10 years, again, and there was just nothing I could do about it. Things just came to a grinding halt from time to time. So the beautiful thing about a novel is I have no one but myself to worry about.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because I remember when Dark Knight Returns came out, there was like a year in between issues 3 and 4. And so I guess with Batman, people are patient and willing to wait for something like that, especially Frank Miller does it. But, you know, maybe with Zero Killer, because he's a new character and he's something that we haven't seen before, it may be that it has to take some time for people to discover it and to do it. So that's what I'm doing here, is I'm trying to promote it because I really enjoyed it. And I really want people to know about it and give it a chance, because I'd like to see more of this. It's a great story. It's different, and I crave different sometimes. You know, I read all the Supermans. I read Batman. Batman's my favorite character, but the truth of it is that if you're a good reader, you got to have variety. And this gives me a really good move in a different direction and a different way of thinking. So I really hope that people will give it a try. I really liked it.
Thank you, Wayne. Thank you. Yeah, and I think Frank Miller can get away with a year. You know, he's Frank Miller. He can do whatever he wants.
I am not. Well, any other projects you want to talk about while I've got you on here? I don't want to miss anything. Are the other things that you're doing? I know you're working on Lord of the Jungle, and that's coming out in December. And, of course, they can pick up Rex Mundi trade paperbacks. Are there other irons in the fire that we should know about?
No, that's really about it, Wayne. Thanks for talking. I mean, gee, I'm just – boy, I hope that by Thanksgiving, I think I'll have my novel done.
Well, maybe we'll talk again when that happens, so we can when the movie's coming out, we'll talk again, so we can promote that, because it sounds really interesting to me.
Thanks, Wayne. Thank you. Look, just give me a call.
Okay, we'll do, Arvid. Thanks for talking with me, and we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Wayne.
It's science fiction that will blow your mind. This is SFE Now.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
It's time for this week's comic reviews. DC really dominated the comics this week as far as the quality goes, in my opinion. Let me run down the books that I thought were really terrific, and I'll do them in somewhat alphabetic order. Batman and Robin continues to tell a great and interesting story while focusing on Damian Wayne and his relationship to his father, and he actually loses something this issue. I couldn't believe it. Next, of course, I enjoyed Batwoman, and that art is really the thing that grabs me.
Demon Knights number 3 by Paul Cornell is yet another great comic, telling stories that are really unique in the DC universe. Then Jeff Lemire brings Frankenstein Agent of Shade, which has a really skewed and off-center way of looking at stories, and I like it a lot. It's very different. Legion Lost is definitely an improvement this time. Mr. Terrific also improved. It got much better towards the end of the issue. Also, Superboy number 3 has me wondering just where in the world we're going. I like that. Meanwhile, Deathstroke, Grifter, and Resurrection Man continue to improve, so I haven't seen any of the New 52 Crash or Burn yet. Other books that were out this week that I thought were really good were Star Trek Legion of Superheroes number 2 from IDW, John Carter of Mars, The World of Mars number 2 of 5 from Marvel, Wolf number 4 from Atlas, and the final Darkwing Duck from Boom Studios. I imagine that'll go over to Marvel before too long, but I'm sorry to see that go. Now, my book of the week, I'm going to hold off a little bit until I talk with Gianluca Glazer in the upcoming segment about news and previews. We'll talk a little bit about the books of the week, so be sure to stick around and listen to that. And those are the comic reviews for this week.
In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape his sight. Hal Jordan is Green Lantern. And in 2011, all his adventures will be in one place. Cartoon Network is proud to present an all-new original series. Green Lantern, the animated series. Go Green.
Okay, let's talk about the Green Lantern, the animated series debut that took place recently on Cartoon Network. And to do that with me is my brother Randy Hall. How are you, Randy?
Doing good. Things are green.
Yeah, I start this little segment off with a commercial from the Cartoon Network that says, Go Green.
Oh.
And that's what's going on in here. It's clearly we're going green on this. First impressions, basically with the first two episodes combined into one, what was your first feeling after you got done watching it?
Well, it's interesting to watch because this is the first time a DC Comics character has had an animated series done entirely through computer generation. Mm-hmm. So the characters had a somewhat different look, but in some ways it was sort of like Pixar because they used the animated stuff. It was slightly different, but it didn't take long to warm up to it. Mm-hmm. The writing was very clever. The voices were right in tune with the characters, and the story was really an interesting beginning. It is just the first two episodes, but we have several twists and turns all the way through, and it brings in one of the groups from the Green Lantern comics, of which there are four these days, and one of them that has their own comic is the Red Lanterns. So the Red Lanterns are kind of a nasty bunch to be villains. They don't always fight you with the ring. What they do is barf up some red acid-like. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of nasty stuff for animated business. But they handled it very well.
Mm-hmm. I thought the animation was quite good. As some people online have said, the humans are the ones that look the smoothest and the plainest. Hal Jordan looks pretty smooth. This is what happens in Toy Story and the other films. The human beings don't look as intricate and as interesting as the machines or the aliens do. But you get used to that pretty quickly, I think, in this show.
The first two episodes started off with an interesting deal. We all know pretty much Hal Jordan's origin and the fact that he ends up running into Sinestro and all of that. Well, we're left at the beginning at first to wonder whether or not that's already happened. And it fascinates me because just as the Green Lantern live-action movie earlier this year, they take a different road. They don't start with Abensur crashing to Earth and giving Hal Jordan a ring. And then duking it out with Sinestro, who was a Green Lantern who went overboard. Instead, we get Hal Jordan, who is a pretty seasoned crime fighter and policeman for the galaxy. And we see the things develop, and I just so much enjoyed the various twists and turns. It's interesting also to me, there are some people who think that Hal Jordan should really have a halo over his head and not really have any character development. The people who did this animation, and I suspect that includes the Green Lantern comics writer, Jeff Johns, mm-hmm. Hal makes a couple of errors in there because he's just too confident, overconfident. And in that regard, puts them into a great deal of trouble at points. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, I think that there's going to be room for Hal Jordan's character to grow as we go through the episodes.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've got several voices that are new, and different voice actors are doing it. Hal Jordan is done by a guy by the name of Josh Keaton.
He did a great job.
Yeah, he's as opposed to Nathan Fillion, who does them in the direct-to-DVD stuff. This is a different voice altogether. Tom Kenny plays Zilla Zox, one of the Red Lanterns.
Right.
Kilowog is done by Kevin Michael Richardson.
Kilowog is always such an interesting character. He's either a really tough-as-nails drill instructor, or else he kind of like, when he's out of his depth, he's sort of like, guess we'll have to do something about this.
Yeah, Atrocitus is done by Jonathan Adams.
And there's another part from the comic. Mm-hmm. Atrocitus is the head of the Red Lanterns. And as a result of that, they make him look pretty darn mean in the cartoon.
Mm-hmm. And then Razor, the younger Red Lantern, is done by Jason Spisak. And he has an interesting development along the way, too. I don't want to spoil too much, but Razor goes through some interesting developments.
Yeah, I have to agree that one of the things, of course, these aren't individual episodes like they used to be. In fact, some people compared Green Lantern, the animated series, to Batman, the animated series. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's 20 years later, and the way we watch our cartoons, our animated stuff, takes a different thing. There's more continuity, and that happens in these first two episodes. It ends with a pretty amazing surprise to me that I didn't think it would actually do, but there's some things happen at the end that leave us hanging for the next episode. And mm-hmm. Bruce Timm, who was involved with Batman, is one of the people involved with this, and you can feel the twists and turns as they go around. It's not standard viewing. Really holds your attention, and that's terrific stuff.
Yeah, and the drawings are based on his drawings. You can see the barrel-chested Green Lantern as it was in Justice League. You see a lot of his kind of style involved into it. And I think that's a good thing as far as animation goes. It's going to help make the transition from artwork to CGI a lot more understandable and a lot more palatable for people, I think.
I think that was really good about them was that each of the characters had their own physical type. They weren't all the same. I mean, you had this guy that Hal Jordan called Mr. Beachball, the one with a great big ball with only like little arms and little legs sticking out of it. And the other villain is a big, square-off, rare-and-to-go person. And then you've got the teenager who is kind of conflicted throughout it. And of course, Hal Jordan, being Hal, is going to be the main human of all of this. And then you've got Kilowog, one of the most interesting characters that I didn't anticipate. Was the ship that Hal Jordan creates a personality for, the vessel that takes them out to battle the Red Lanterns. And I thought that was pretty clever stuff. There are changes along the way. Carol Ferris is involved, but she might come back maybe later on, but it'd be pretty unusual. One of the interesting things I think about this also is that it was an attempt to establish its own identity. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, as in the live-action movie, you don't have Sinestro being the number one first-up bad guy. You don't have all these other movements, but they relied on several other items. Gansett was the character of the Guardians who secretly helps Hal and Kilowog get on this mission. And again, a lot of those things are reminiscent of what Geoff Johns has done in the Green Lantern comic. And that has pushed it really to one of the top characters. And it's funny, when DC would put out posters, you would see Superman, Batman, Flash, and Wonder Woman. Well, the last time they put out a big poster, it had Superman, Batman, Green Lantern, and Wonder Woman. So somebody has managed to go up the ladder and become one of the real stalwart characters in DC's universe.
I think it's interesting, too, that they don't use Sinestro, because Sinestro is a very common thing. Whenever Green Lanterns appears, Sinestro's been there with him. And I think it's a good idea to go a different direction and carve out different groundwork with this. So I like that about this series. I also like the fact that the Red Lanterns are something different, and yet there's something similar about them. So we do have some sort of conflict. As in the books, apparently something the Guardians have done has made trouble across the galaxy. And so we're going to find that out as we go along.
It's always interesting that the Guardians, who are supposed to be billions of years old and so wise and so wonderful, and it seems like every time we turn around to them, they've goofed up and somebody else has been a mess. And in another regard, that's just what the comics had to do. The Guardians had something to do with the creation of the Red Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
The Guardians are pretty much standard thing in the live-action movie. They had great big long robes. This was pretty much as they would appear in the comics.
One of the things that Bruce Timm always likes to do, and he did this with Batman and Superman and the Justice League, is he goes and cherry-picks the things that he thinks are most interesting in the books. And I think he picked the storyline from Green Lantern Emerald Knights, the comic, because in that book, Guy Gardner takes Kilowog and several other Green Lanterns, and they go to a very remote part of the galaxy. This time, we have Hal Jordan doing that. And what's good about that is it allows them to tell stories that have absolutely no impact on anywhere else in the DC universe. Characters can be introduced, and he can kill them if he wants to. He can create new ones if he wants to. He can do all kinds of new things. I think that's a good thing when Mr. Timm's involved.
Because he's so involved in the DC animated productions,
mm-hmm.
I think that he brings a knowledge to it that other folks who aren't involved with the characters in the DC universe, and he's been with it now for coming on 20 years, mm-hmm. he's been involved with all of that. He sees Hal Jordan as a character who is very brave and very strong and fearless, but he also sees the flip side of that, that sometimes Hal rushes in where angels fear to tread. And sometimes they pay a price for that. And that's something that is played out in the first two episodes. Mm-hmm. I think that's really a really good thing to have the character develop as the series goes along. And I think that Hal, for all of his battle strategy and all those other things, he's now become someone who makes a mistake now and then, and they have to pick up the pieces and go back.
I think it's a good show because it's going to go places we haven't seen before on television. We don't have space-based science fiction as much as we used to because it's very expensive to do. But when you've got a computer or you've got hand-drawn cartoons, you can go places and it's a lot cheaper to go there. Not that it's inexpensive, but it's cheaper than it is to do something on, like, say, Farscape.
Yeah, one of the things also about Green Lantern that Geoff Johns and some of the others have done is when Hal Jordan started out in the 60s, the color yellow was something his ring couldn't affect.
Mm-hmm.
And that baffled me because, you know, green is blue and yellow. Mm-hmm. How could one aspect of that, it should have been red was the color because that's neither the yellow nor blue.
Mm-hmm.
But as time has gone on, Geoff Johns has cleared the path for this, that the rings are no longer susceptible to yellow. Instead, they operate with a certain amount of charge. And when their ring is starting to come down to empty on energy, it tells them, and they have to hurry up and get their rings recharged. But you don't see yellow arrows and yellow boxing gloves and yellow this and yellow that. All of that now has been put out of the Lantern mythos. And I think it's a good strategy to put him in with a different kind of struggle while he's fighting the bad guys.
Well, I think it's interesting that we see the oath, but we see it in a very unique way. They don't just have him standing at the lantern saying that. He has to say it in a different format, and I like that pretty much. That's the way that I think Tim will approach the series. We'll see things we haven't seen before, hopefully, and I think that'll be a good thing for Cartoon Network, and I think it'll be good for the Green Lantern fans, too. I just think that it's a good time to be a Green Lantern fan with all this stuff going on.
Well, there are no fewer than 4 Green Lantern titles coming out now from DC. The regular Green Lantern book, which is written by Geoff Johns, the Green Lantern Corps, Green Lantern New Guardians, which features Kyle Rayner, and a book on the Red Lantern. I don't know if they intended those to come out at the same time of a comic like that and the cartoon, but I think it's really terrific that it happened that way. There's kind of a bridge that you can follow the cartoon and then maybe want to pick up the comic book or vice versa on that.
Mm-hmm. So as a Green Lantern fan, you looked at it as a positive thing.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because in the 90s, when DC was doing all kinds of big things to their characters, one of the things that happened was that Green Lantern's hometown, Coast City, was destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted enough power to be able to reassemble it and put it together. And he became so obsessed with that he went after the Guardians and killed just about half the Corps. And then drains all the energy out of the power battery and became Parallax. He had kind of a cool-looking green armor outfit, but every time I saw him, I was, you know, I'd been a Hal Jordan fan for 30 years, and it was difficult. So then it got passed down supposedly to someone by chance. Kyle Rayner, who in some ways resembles Peter Parker in that he lives in New York, whereas Peter Parker is a photographer, Kyle Rayner is a cartoonist and or painter, and he stayed in New York a lot of the time. And the only time I ever really looked at his book was when there were people from the Silver Age Green Lantern crew. All of a sudden, they decided, after spending 10 years struggling to keep the Green Lantern book going, Geoff Johns approached Dan DiDio, who is the Grand High Exalted Poobah, and said, you know, Hal Jordan is a really good character, and the person who edited for a while, named Peter Tomasi, said, I think Green Lantern could be the best franchise. And if you look now, there are 4 Green Lantern or Green Lantern-related titles, and there are also 4 Superman-related titles. Batman has a lot more in about 9 of them, but Superman and Green Lantern are neck and neck as we're going along here in this. We've talked about recently about the relaunch of DC.
Do you want to see new characters, or do you want to see some of the stuff from the comics done in the show?
Done intelligently. I don't think just drop for the heck of it into it. If they've got a story that works out with Sinestro, mm-hmm. Great, let's have it. But I like what they're doing. They are plowing new ground at the same time that they're giving the older characters, like Kilowog and Hal Jordan, a chance to sort of stand on their own. And as far as the other Green Lanterns are concerned, there are Green Lanterns out there. So it's not that they're not going to run into any more Green Lanterns. Of course, there's a chance to be really creative with these alien Green Lanterns. And a lot of times they've had Green Lantern Corps stories in the comics. And one of them was about a creature who got the ring but was blind. And how do you be a Green Lantern if you can't tell the colors? They were very interesting stories. It wouldn't surprise me to see some very innovative Green Lantern characters and Green Lantern powers. I think that with the familiarity that Bruce Timm has with DC in general and Green Lantern specifically, I think we can look to see some really exciting stuff come as the series unfolds.
Now, we won't see this again until spring of 2012, so we have a wait. Yeah, but they did this in the middle of sweeps, which is an indication they expected good things from it. As soon as we find out ratings, we'll pass them along to people. But I'm looking forward to this show, and I'm sure you are too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a wonderful time to be a Green Lantern fan. Not only do you have four comics, you had a live-action movie, which is now out on DVD, and everybody who gets a Christmas gift from me this year is going to get a Green Lantern DVD.
Right.
In the hopes that the movie didn't do quite as well as they expected, so perhaps with a popular animated series and high sales of the DVD of an extended version of the Green Lantern movie. And that's one of the things that's always kind of baffled me. I went to see Green Lantern, and I read all these critics who hated it. And I went through the whole movie, and I said, when does the bad stuff show up? And it never did, and I went to see it a second time. And it still had the effect on me that I was just absolutely overwhelmed with such a well-done film with that. So who knows, maybe these things will turn Green Lantern's struggle in the live action around, and perhaps if there's enough interest, we'll get that second movie, which they teased us with at the very, very end of the first film.
I think this is a good show. I think it'll be a good addition to the Friday night lineup that Cartoon Network is being so successful with. So we'll wait until the spring of 2012, and then we'll get more Green Lantern. So thanks for talking with me about the show, Andy.
My pleasure.
It's time for this week's news and previews. And with me, as always, is Gianluca Glazer. How are you, Gianluca?
I'm doing well.
Doing good. We're minus Ian Collin this time. He's off doing other good things, so he'll be back, I'm sure, next week. But this week, he's not with us, so we'll soldier on.
Yes, we'll try to manage.
Yeah. Okay, as far as news goes, Gianluca, what news would you like for us to know about?
A few items. Right now, Joyce Braber, Harvey Pekar's wife, is trying to do a fundraiser for a Harvey Pekar memorial statue. She started that on Kickstarter. So if you like the work of Harvey Pekar, you know, definitely check it out. See if you can make a donation. Mm-hmm. In other news, Mick Angelo, creator of Marvel Man, passed away this week. He'd been sick for a while, but it's a shame. Marvel Man was a pretty interesting series, especially later on when Alan Moore took a shot at it.
Yeah.
In other news, crossovers, we have Top Cow's Witchblade is meeting up with Dynamite's Red Sonja. Dynamite's going to be publishing this Witchblade Red Sonja crossover. Interesting stuff there. And then announced for DC Universe Presents, it's going to get a new creative team starting with issue 6. Co-writers Dan Didio and Jerry Ordway, with Ordway providing the artwork. Also, we got an update for the top 300 sales in September.
Okay.
You know, numbers came in. Interesting to see the list of titles for the month. DC had 129 titles. Marvel had 84 titles. Usually it's the other way around. You know, usually you see Marvel with over 100 titles. But you had like a lot of reprints of issue 1s that showed up in September numbers. So that definitely boosts DC's amount of titles for the top 300.
Right.
Interesting stuff here. The top 10, you had Justice League number 2 with 180,709 units. Batman 2 had 172,428 units. Basically, you had all this stuff over six figures. You had Action Comics number 2, Green Lantern number 2, Flash number 2, Detective Comics number 2, and then you have at number 7, Marvel's top title, The Incredible Hulk number 1, and that had 106,472. And then they also had, right after that, another Marvel title, Wolverine and X-Men number 1, which had 95,855. So, interesting. And then you had Fear Itself. So, Marvel had three titles in the top 10. That was next at number 9. And then Superman number 2, the last item in the top 10, sold 94,233. So, those are some big numbers there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Next, Dark Horse appears at number 64 on the chart with Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 9. Mm-hmm. Issue number 2, and that had 36,448 copies. Mm-hmm. Image Comics appears at number 78 and 79. Walking Dead, issue 90 and issue 89. So two issues of The Walking Dead, no big shocker there.
Yeah.
They both had just over 31,000 copies sold. In terms of DC's reprints, I think Shade number 1 is the first one, the top one to appear at number 82. And that had just over 30,000 copies. And this is reorder copies.
Mm-hmm.
IDW shows up at 109 with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles ongoing number 3.
Mm-hmm.
That sold almost 23,000. It was 22,855.
Mm-hmm.
And then the very last, like the bottom of the reorder numbers for DC's number 1 issues was at 298 with Static Shock number 1. That had 5,264 copies. The last title in the top 300 was Robert E. Hawk's Savage Sword, number 3 from Dark Horse. And so the bottommost number in the top 300 was 5,167. So you definitely pushed the scale. That's a pretty high number for being the 300th number. So you had like a lot of series, a lot of even issue number ones,
mm-hmm.
like Boom Studios' Key of Z, that didn't even appear on the chart because the bar had been set so high. Sales.
Interesting. Now you reminded me of another piece of news that John Rosen was leaving Static Shock, and we were uncertain as to where he was going to go. Well, it came out this past week that he's going to be restarting a Zombie with an X. That'll be back at DC. I was buying that before when DC was publishing it, and it was a great comic. And you don't get many comics that have an Oriental male lead in them anymore, and so that's going to be a great thing to have that book back. But I like the book. It's a crazy book. It's way off center. You know, all kinds of crazy named characters, which I really like. So that'll be back as well.
Is Vertigo going to be publishing that? Before it was published through Vertigo.
I think this time it's DC.
Oh, cool.
I think it'll be DC. So actually that'll work out better for Mr. Rosen. I think that'll give a little more exposure
mm-hmm.
as opposed to Vertigo. But we'll see. It's an interesting thing. But since we didn't get to do the best and the worst of the week on the SFP Now podcast, do you want to talk briefly about what you thought were the best and the worst of the week?
As far as best and worst of the week,
mm-hmm.
I had just early one title that I enjoyed, really, really enjoyed a lot. But okay. That was Batwoman number 3. And just the artwork is just so amazing, especially the first few pages of the book.
Mm-hmm.
You have some really good splash pages involving the Batwoman character. She's underwater.
The artwork is the strong part of that book for me. I like that quite a lot. Now, of course, my favorite was Batgirl number 3, which I really enjoyed.
I figured.
Yeah, I mean, there's no surprise there. She gets to fight Nightwing, and it's a sort of a reunion, and they kind of agree to disagree, and then they go their separate ways. The art's good. It's a good story. I like Batgirl, so I'm not surprised that the Batwomen are doing very well as far as art things go. Now, to get on to the previews, what things are coming out this week that you're interested in?
All right. November 16th. I looked through it. Here's some titles that stood out for me personally. Batman number 3 comes out. And interesting to see that on MidtownComics.com, they have a Greg Capullo sketch cover. And it's normally priced at $250. They have it on sale for $212.50.
Wow. What a bargain. What a bargain.
I know. That is quite the cover. That is quite the comic book there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is something that was kind of personal to me growing up as a kid. But, you know, looking back at it now, it's not really that good. But DC is releasing Batman Death in the Family New Edition trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
This involved the killing of Jason Todd, the second Robin.
Mm-hmm.
This was quite a controversial thing at the time. There was actually a vote for whether he lived or died, and the majority of the people wanted him to be killed off. The story, it kind of sucks. I mean, it involves the Joker in the Middle East. It's quite ridiculous, you know. He beats the guy, Jason Todd, with a crowbar and then blows up the building with, I guess, him and his mom. I guess it's also just kind of proof, too, that nobody ever dies in comic books.
That's for sure.
Because if Jason Todd can be brought back over 20 years later, then really nobody is safe for eternal death.
Right. Right. Now, the interesting thing was there were two phone lines that were set up for this book. If you wanted Jason Todd to survive, you called one number. And if you wanted him to die, you called the second number. They actually weren't terribly far apart when the numbers actually came down. But it did come down to kill Jason Todd, which, as you so wisely point out, that doesn't last long in comic books. I mean, the Kents have come back I don't know how many times in Superman. And Jason Todd is back. In fact, he's got his own book now.
And he wasn't really that big of a character either. He didn't really have like a long relatively span as Robin back in the 80s.
Well, you remember Jim Starlin wrote this, and Jim Starlin's usually a spacefaring type guy. He actually showed we meet Jason Todd when he's taking the wheels off the Batmobile, and Batman laughs out loud, and I remember looking at it and going like, I feel this ghost of Adam West. So right. I wasn't very happy with that, and a lot of people really didn't like it. And I think he got off on the wrong foot, and Jason Todd never really caught on with people. But Tim Drake more than made up for that because he was a much better Robin.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the things. Any other things that you want to bring up for this coming week?
Yeah, there's a few other things. Also want to mention that Mike Mignola did some great covers for that back in the day today.
Yeah, yeah.
That was cool. Star Trek 100-Page Spectacular. IDW has that coming out. It's going to be an anthology of stories. So if you like Star Trek, maybe check it out. Also from IDW, they have a Felix the Cat Greatest Comic Book Tales trade paperback, collecting the classic comic. So if you're a fan of Felix the Cat, there you go. A couple of titles from Image, Blue Estate number 7.
Yay.
yay. I don't really promote that title, but, you know, it's good. The covers are amazing. So, you know, definitely check it out. If you've been following the story, if not, pick up the first trade and see if it's your thing. Also, they have a trade collection of Who is Jake Ellis? I've heard good things about it. I haven't particularly read it, but I've heard a lot of good things. So it's a good opportunity, I guess, to pick it up then.
Yeah, I haven't read it either. So we'll have to explore it and see what that one's like.
Yeah. Boom has a few titles. They did that Decision 2012 thing where people voted, retailers, I guess, ordered how many of each of these candidates they wanted to get. I heard Obama was like the leading comic candidate. So it'll be kind of interesting to compare it to like how the primaries do and how the actual election does, you know, if Boom is actually able to predict these things with this. But so – back on subject, though, they have Decision 2012 Michelle Bachmann comic. So apparently she may have been like the most ordered of all the Republican primary nominees there.
There might be an alpha order because B is Bachmann. Maybe. Yeah, it'll be funny to see how it goes. Iowa Caucus, she did reasonably well, but not since then. So I'm not convinced how well this is going to sell. But I've had doubts about this thing from the start. So
that's true. Like I said, I'll be interesting to compare on the monthly charts, assuming they make the monthly charts as the bars and set it over 5,000 to see kind of like where these particular titles ranked.
Right.
Kia Z number 2 comes out. It's from the guy from Coheed and Cambria. He had done other books through Boom, like the Amory Wars. So this is a new tale. I believe it involves zombies. Planet of the Apes number 8 comes out.
Yeah.
And then the very last of the Stan Lee books, Stan Lee Starborn issue 12, which was the really prettiest one of all three of them.
Yeah.
So this is the last one. No more Stan Lee comics at Boom.
Well, Traveler, when I got that one, I read that, and it wrote as if that was the last book, and so I really believed it when I talked about that. But yeah, I think this is the end of the Stan Lee line, which I still feel really bad about.
Yeah, and then Dynamite has Bionic Man number 4.
Woohoo!
Also, you promote Kickstart. I noticed Kickstart has a book out also called Deadwalker. It's a trade paperback.
Yeah.
And I have a thing here. What's it about? It's Jonathan Walker brought himself back from the dead to avenge his wife's murder, but at what cost? While taking his revenge, he must also save the world from the evil he himself created and seemingly cursed to live forever. He will struggle to find new meaning in eternal life. Interesting stuff.
That book would have been really good if it had been time to come out around Halloween. And coming out a little after, I'm sort of sorry because I've had a chance to read it. I got a promotional copy from Kickstart, and I enjoy their product. And again, this is a self-contained story, which always makes Kickstart a lot of fun to read. Mm-hmm. I just wish it would have come out before Halloween. Of course, you know, with these things, they get in Walmarts. They get all over the place. So it could very well be that this book's going to sell very well. It deserves to. It's very well done. So I like it. I'm just going to be curious to see how it does. But if you like a good self-contained story, something that's a little unusual these days, because you don't get many self-contained stories anymore. Mm-mm. It's nice to read that. So that's a good one.
Yeah.
I'll just throw in a couple other ones that I'm curious about. There's a book called Dream Reavers that I like. I got to interview one of the creators of that. Dream Reavers number 2 is coming out this week, which is a good one. First one was kind of interesting. It's about teenagers from around the world who can enter a dreamscape. And when they do, they get special powers, and it's a very interesting one. It's a very diverse comic in the sense that you've got, you know, somebody from India, somebody from, I think, South America. You've got one Anglo, I think he's from UK, so I don't know if you have an American in the whole bunch, but it's a very good book. I liked it quite a lot. Other stuff that I think deserve to be mentioned, we've got Birds of Prey number 3, Blue Beetle number 3, Captain Atom, Catwoman. You've also got Flash the Road to Flashpoint hardcover. That's the pre-stories before Flashpoint started, so that's a good one. Green Lantern Corps, Justice League number 3 with the combo pack, Legion of Superheroes, Nightwing, Supergirl, Wonder Woman, Young Justice number 10, which is always great fun, and the trade paperback of Zatanna, which was written by Paul Dini, which I liked a lot. That's also out. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going out there. I'm glad you mentioned the Planet of the Apes, because that's what I'm really looking forward to as well.
Yeah, I can't wait for Arcade to come out with The Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be sometime this month, so I'm really looking forward to that, whenever that is.
Let me pop one other one in there. Atomic Robo, Ghost of Station X, number 3 of 6 is out this week, and that's a very good book. Those are always good books. If you want to read a good book that'll actually teach you a little science along the way while having fun.
And they're funny.
Yeah, that's the thing. Not many comics are fun anymore, but that's a great fun book, so I like that a lot. Anything else we should throw out, or is that pretty much enough for folks, you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've given them their money's worth.
Okay. All right, and on that note, we'll end up the news previews and even throw a couple of best and worst in there. So, all right, Gianluca, we'll talk with you next week.
All right.
And let's see what wonderful and strange things have arrived in your comic store this week. There's an Android Golem for $8.99, which is going to be kind of an interesting thing to have. There's also t-shirts for Batman Arkham City, the very successful video game that's currently being sold. I'm still waiting for that to hit the PC. There's a Bold Logo t-shirt, a Harley Points t-shirt, a Somebody Loves Me t-shirt, a Two-Face Wants Out t-shirt. So those are going to keep the people who enjoy the game busy. You can wear that while you play. There's also a Batman Legacy Wave 2 Golden Age action figure series. There's a Captain America leather guitar strap and a Captain America nylon guitar strap. So if you're playing your guitar, you can wear Captain America colors. There's also a Captain America Rock Master electric guitar to go with those straps. That is a paltry $199.99. Why they just don't round it up to $200, I'll never get. But you can play Captain America music on your new guitar. There's a Catwoman pedestal by Adam Hughes t-shirt. There's also a DC Comics White Covers Magnet set, as well as a DC HeroClix Superman Battle Smallville Fast Forces. So that's interesting stuff. And also a t-shirt by Mr. Hughes with all the DC Universe stars on them. So it's fun, worth getting. For the Whovians, there's Doctor Who, Fourth Doctor, and the Sontaran 8-inch action figures. There's also an EC Comics logo t-shirt, as well as a Frazetta EC Comics t-shirt, not to be confused with DC Comics. There's a Flashpoint Reverse Flash t-shirt also. There's Futurama Planet Express hoodies. There are also Godzilla charcoal t-shirts. A Ghost Rider nylon guitar strap, although oddly enough, he doesn't have a guitar. He's only got the strap. There are Harry Potter Deathly Hallows DVDs and a Blu-ray should be arriving there.
There's also, if you enjoyed the Frank Miller Holy Terror book recently, there are t-shirts for that that are out. There's one that's just a regular one by Frank Miller, and then there's another one called Diplomacy by Frank Miller, too. And by the way, if you want to hear my interview with Bob Schreck about Holy Terror, listen to episode number 34, which was last week. There's also Iron Man Armored Avenger Black Widow Model Kit, a classic museum statue of Iron Man, as well as his nylon guitar strap. There's an Iron Spider-Man mini bust. Marvel has a classic comic covers 11x14 photo. There's also the Marvel classic guitar pick pack to go with all the guitar stuff. I guess it's time for the Christmas season to come around, so they have decided to push guitars. There's also Marvel Comics action figures, a 2-pack, a Marvel flight bag for $44, the Marvel Heroes guitar pick packs, which are about $10 each, the Marvel logo neon sign to put up when you're playing your Marvel instruments, Marvel mini mates, a Marvel 6 leather guitar strap. That one's a little more expensive. That's about $40. There's also a Marvel Villains guitar pick pack for about $10. So Marvel and guitars, that seems to be the thing this week. There's Saturday Night of the Living Dead disco t-shirts for those people who enjoy zombies. There's also the Spider-Man nylon guitar strap. There's a Superman Meteor t-shirt by Adam Hughes. There's the TV board game for The Walking Dead, $40. There's also a Thor's nylon guitar strap. A Unicorn Being a Jerk trade paperback. That should be something different. The Walking Dead TV Bicycle Girl Zombie Bust, as well as the Tank Zombie Bust. So you know you've got to get those things if you're a big fan of The Walking Dead. Oh, and Wolverine, by the way, he has his nylon guitar strap as well. Then there's also the Wonder Woman Transformation Adam Hughes t-shirt. Then there's the X-Men leather guitar strap. That's the final one of those for $40. And the final t-shirt is also by Adam Hughes, Zatanna. Always a good thing. So those are the wonderful things in your store this week. And that's a wrap for the 35th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. If you didn't hear my previous interview with Arvid Nelson, go to sfp-now.com and look for episode 33, which was 2 weeks ago. You'll get to hear our discussion about other things, including his John Carter of Mars series for Dynamite, and looking forward to Lord of the Jungle. So be sure to catch up on that. Just a word of warning, after next week's podcast, I'm going to be taking the week off for Thanksgiving weekend here in the States. Then there'll be a few episodes, and then I'll take a couple of weeks off for the Christmas and New Year's holiday weekends. So until next time, keep reading your comics.
And so I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.